Hi guys, welcome to or welcome back to The Big Picture with your hosts, Skyla Dempsey,
Claire Bentley,
and Shiloh Williamson.
For those of you who are just joining us, The Big Picture podcast is all about true stories and their events. Claire, Shiloh, and I will watch a movie based on a true story, and then we will come together and talk about how close the events in the movie get to the true story.
Today's quote of the day is, "If we desire respect for the law, we must first make the law respectable," by Louis D. Brandeis.
Which very, coordinates very well with our topic for today. Shiloh would like to take over with that.
So, my movie for this episode is The Zodiac Killer, which was filmed in 2007.
Yes. And for this, we have a very special guest. Her name is Cassandra Oft. She's actually here with us, not on call. So,
hi guys. How's it going?
Good.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, how'd you get into teaching?
So I'm a teacher at Asotin High School. I decided that I wanted to be a teacher when I was a sophomore in high school. And I'd wanted to be one as a little kid, but then I wanted to be like an Egyptologist and things got in the way. So I decided on that. And then I went to school at Carroll College in Helena, Montana, and then did my graduate work at Washington State University. Then I taught for a couple years in OMAC. Then I came here to teach in the middle school, and now I'm here. This is my second year at the high school.
Nice. And what's your, favorite part about being a teacher right now?
It's got to be the connections that I get to make with you guys. I love having the relationships, getting to know you, getting to help you be the best that you can be. It just gives my life meaning.
Yeah, for my junior class, that's definitely a thing, because our sixth-hour class, I feel like we're more or less your students than we are, a group of just 28 friends just hanging out, because we all get our work done.
Those are the best teachers.
Those are Miss Oft is definitely one of them.
Thanks guys,
hence why I gave her an amazing Christmas gift. Do you know anything about the Zodiac
Killer?
What
do you remember about the movie that you watched?
So I know probably more of the true crime side than the movie. I kind of remember the movie. But when I think about it, I'm like, okay, so was it 60s, 70s era, I think?
Yes, yes.
And there was this serial killer. I remember him killing the people at the Lover's Lane, the couple.
Yeah.
And then he killed a cab driver, I think, at one point.
Yeah.
And then I think the thing that really stands out for me with the Zodiac is the ciphers, him sending the letters to the cops and them trying to solve it and all those things. Yeah.
Kind of Riddler.
Yes.
It was a lot taunting.
Claire and I were talking about that yesterday, and we read on the Lover's Lane thing and everything, and it is scary for him to because now if someone had killed a couple on a beach and then sent out a letter to law enforcement being I killed them, they would be caught in 3 days. But in 1963, when the first killing happened and he sent out these letters, they didn't have enough technology the stuff we have now. It took them, 5 decades to even, come remotely close to, they just barely found out who the actual Zodiac Killer is.
So the Zodiac Killer is a pseudonym of an unidentified serial killer who operated in Northern California in the late 1960s. The Zodiac Killer is now known to be Air Force veteran Gary Francis Post, who has since passed away in August 23rd of 2018.
That's scary. They probably didn't know who the Zodiac Killer was right up until he probably passed away.
Yeah.
That's just scary. I remember 2018 is the year my parents got married, and they've been married for 5 years, and I remember, me feeling there is nothing wrong with 2018, because then, 2019 hit, and we're COVID, sucks to be you. No, 2018 felt, really relaxing, a good, year for all of us, but then we come back and look at this, and we're this serial killer was found in 2018, 5 decades after his first murder in 1963. Mm-hmm. That's terrifying.
And the fact that he was an Air Force veteran, that's a little weird.
Yeah.
People like him, because there's there's a bunch of cases of military veterans going completely haywire and just killing people, and that's not what all veterans are, and people like them are what give veterans a bad name.
Yeah.
For sure.
Because my dad's one, and he's, like, a teddy bear. A big, fat, chubby teddy bear. Okay.
So the plot line for the movie is, on July 4th of 1969, an unknown man attacked Darlene Farron and Mike Magoo with a handgun at Lover's Lane in Vallejo, California. Only Mike survives.
Yeah, didn't, like, okay, so didn't they say it was, like, a .22 caliber?
It was a .22 caliber in the...
And, like, okay, so I know I'm a hunter, and I know you two are, like, around mm-hmm. hunters or, like, shoot guns yourself. Yeah. I don't know if Miss Oft has ever...
Not so much.
Okay, so a .22 caliber is, like, a super small bullet. Yeah, the lead piece is literally, like, from nail to nail. It's, like, that small. Mm-hmm. And, like... Didn't it say, like, they were each, like, one of them was, like, shot 9 times and the other one was, 10. Like, 11, 10 or 11? Like, you have to shoot them a lot. And just for, like, one person to survive, like, that's a lot of bullet wounds. Mm-hmm. Like, that's scary.
And, yeah, the .22, like, shotguns are really tiny in themselves.
They said it was a .22 caliber pistol. So it was, like, a tiny, it was, like, you know, in, like, all those old Western movies, like, the girl, like, the fancy, like, school teacher pulls a tiny little gun out of her boot? That's what a .22 caliber pistol is.
But this was not a fancy little teacher.
No, this was a mass murderer. Okay, so 1 month later in San Francisco,
The Chronicle, so, like, newspaper.
Okay, so I'm just going to say the newspaper because I don't understand that. The newspaper receives encrypted letters written by the killer called himself the Zodiac, who threatens to kill a dozen people unless the coded message contains his identity is published. No, thank you. Yeah. I watched the movie last night, and, yeah, no. I watched it by myself. I was holding a 9-month-old baby and watched it. And I'm like, yeah, no.
It's a scary movie. Yeah.
No, thanks.
Political cartoonist Robert Graysmith, who correctly guesses that his identity is not in the message, is not taken seriously by crime reporter Paul Avery or the editors and is excluded from initial details about the killings. When the newspaper publishes the letters, a married couple deciphers one. And in September, the killer stabs a law student, Brian Hartnell and Cecilia Shepherd at Lake Berryessa in Napa County. Cecilia dies 2 days later. And I think that he makes her tie both of them up. They were at, like, a picnic and stuff.
Yeah, they're, I don't remember what their names were, but there was something Claire and I were reading. Like, this guy, like, in 1963, he stabbed this couple. They were seniors. Like, Claire and Shiloh are seniors. Mm-hmm. And these two, senior ditch day, we all know it's senior ditch day, all the seniors leave.
It was the couple that went to go lay on the beach and then
they took their senior ditch day to go on a date and go lay down at the beach. And this man just comes up and stabs them and then throws them in an old shack that sits on the beach. And he attempts to burn this shack down with their bodies in it, but fails. Like, they were just 18 and 19, like, that's scary. And, like, 2 days later, their parents walk down to see their lifeless bodies in the shack.
And that's when the Zodiac Killer started wearing that costume, right? With the hood and the thing and everything. Like, that's just horrifying. That's, like...
Like, we'll put up, like, a picture of what he, like, his costume... I'm calling it a costume because I'm not, like... It's a costume. They're in, like, to this day, like... Something that goes back with one of our previous episodes. I don't think you've watched any of our other episodes, but one of our previous episodes was on the movie I'm Not Ashamed. Do you know what that is?
No, but that sounds so
okay.
Familiar.
So I'm Not Ashamed is like this a movie based on the true story of the 1999 Columbine High School shooting.
Okay, yes.
And like the two boys were part of this thing called the Trench Coat Club.
Trench Coat Mafia.
Mm-hmm. And like to this day, so like. This happened in 1999 in the Columbine High School shooting. Mm-hmm. To this day, there are still people who are trying to recreate that at schools.
Oh, that's unsettling.
And it's the same.
People to this day who are, like, trying to recreate the Zodiac killings. And I'm like,
so there was actually two people that did try to recreate it. And one was the Kobe child murders, which occurred in Suma, Kobe, Japan on March 16th and May 27th of 1997. There were two victims. Ayaka Yamashita, age 10, and June Hayes, age 11, were murdered by a 14-year-old boy reportedly named Shinichiro Azuma under the alias Saito Sakibara. The perpetrator was arrested on June 28th, 1997, and in connection with the Hase murders, he later both confessed to both of them. As a juvenile, he was prosecuted and convicted as Boy A, and his real name has never officially been released because of Japanese law, and they wanted to keep him anonymous, but some weekly magazines reported that his name was Shinichiro Azuma. And in 2004, he was released, and on May 27th, the head of June Hayes, a special education pupil at Tenohata Elementary School, was found in front of the school gate hours before pupils arrived for classes. He had been beheaded with a handsaw, and with further mutilations being done before being left in front of the school for students to discover when they arrive. And then also a note was written in red pen. It was stuffed in his mouth, identifying the killer as Sakibara. And the note said, "This is the beginning of the game. Try to stop me if you can, you stupid police. I desperately want to see people die. It is a thrill for me to commit murder. A bloody judgment is needed for my years of great bitterness."
Mind you, I don't remember his name, like the actual name of the Zodiac killer, but he left a note after his first murder in 1963, mm-hmm. and, like, that was sent to the newspapers, and what was it say? I like to see people die. Killing is fun for me. Yeah. And me and Claire were kind of talking, like, my what I want to do on my free time for fun is hunting. She likes to...
I like to go to, like, the pick and pulls with some of my friends and just go pull parts off cars and stuff like that.
Like, for fun. And then there's this guy, like, I like to kill people for fun. Like, that's terrifying.
Or, like, you know, these
14-year-old boys in Japan.
Yeah.
This happened in America. On the other side of the freaking world, there is a 14-year-old boy who's like, I want to be just like that guy.
Yeah, like,
just
imagine.
Just to show you, like, how young this kid was, he was misspelling words on the note as well. He said, "Shul killer" instead of "school killer." And, so they kind of connected it to the Zodiac murders because they're similar in a lot of ways. And the beginning with the phrase, it's the beginning of the game, the letter that stated that I'm putting my life at stake for the sake of this game. If I caught, I'll probably be hanged. Police should be angrier and more tenacious by pursuing me. It's only when I kill am I liberated from the constant hatred that I suffer and that I'm able to attain peace. It is only when I give pain to people that I can ease my own pain. And he was also, like, I think he was angry because the letter was also yelling at the educational system, calling it compulsory education, that informed me an invisible person. So you can see there's a lot of, like, misunderstood parts of these people that could have been fixed before all this happened.
Yeah, and it's so scary, too, I think, because, like, when people are struggling, when they have somebody that they can identify with and it's a horrible person to, like, connect to, and I think it's such a danger of when we glorify serial killers, because, like, I love true crime and I love serial, like, I'm fascinated by this.
Yeah. I think we all are.
Yeah, I feel like that's something that we can fall into sometimes is when we're like, oh, you know, we talk about, oh, these killers, and we don't focus on the victims and we don't focus on the horrors of it, then all of a sudden we glorify them and it becomes things like this where, you know, a kid in Japan, because he's disturbed and he's struggling and all these things, he ends up identifying with this horrible human and deciding that that's the path he wants to follow.
And I think that's, like, what's wrong with the society in America is, like, we glorify these killers and we're sorry for this family for, like, their kids dying, and we're so sorry that these kids died. But let's talk about who this person was. Let's dig deeper. Like, we're in Washington, and we're in the LC Valley in Idaho, just over the border, over at U of I, the Idaho College, there were four kids stabbed. And today, like still today, they're talking about this Ryan Kohlberger, the guy who murdered them. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, they're like, sorry for the kids and the parents. But let's dig deeper. They're like literally live streaming all of the court cases, and they're not doing anything. Like, yeah, they're talking about these kids, but we're so fixated on who this killer is that...
Like, we idolize mm-hmm. like Richard Ramirez or Ted Bundy. They had like these massive fan bases. Fans were like, you know, sending in letters wanting to marry these, you know.
Yeah. Like, there's a TV show named Dahmer after Jeffrey Dahmer. Like, we are, like, American society is just glorifying these killers. And now, and the same society who's glorifying these killers are wondering why there is kids in Japan who are going around and killing people and blaming it on an American killer. Well, we're putting posters up being like, oh, look at this killer. Who isn't going to be like, who isn't in a depressed state and like hates themselves so much? Who isn't going to look at this person to be like, you're my idol?
Like, imagine walking up to someone and asking who their idol is. Mine's the Zodiac Killer.
Like,
okay. Like, everyone else has like these normal idols.
Yeah.
Like, I look up to my
hers is Taylor Swift. Mrs. Off is Taylor Swift.
Yes, it is. No shame.
If we had to go with that, if I had to like somewhat agree with her, mine would be Travis Kelce only because it's football.
Like, my idol is my fire chief. I look up to him. But no.
Mine's my dad.
This guy, Zodiac Killer.
That's what's wrong with American society, is we just glorify these killers, and it's horrendous.
Yeah.
That's scary.
So after the March 16th attack, he wrote in his diary, quote, I carried out sacred experiments today to confirm how fragile human beings are. I brought the hammer down. When the girl turned to face me, I think I hit her a few times, but I was too excited to remember, end quote. The following week, on March 23rd, he added, quote, this morning my mom told me, poor girl, the girl attacked seems to have died. There is no sign of me being caught. I thank you. And then he said, you know, their God in his language. I'm not going to try to pronounce it. So he's thanking the God for this. So he's, mm-hmm. for this, please continue to protect me, end quote. The meaning or identity of this God remains unclear. A number of people, including Shojiro Goto, a lawyer who dealt with many false accusation cases, Hideyoko and Nobuyoshi Itawa, former principal of the junior high school that Boy A attended, insist that the Boy A was wrongfully accused and point out contradictions. In the statement of the investigating authorities, some examples.
Police investigations said that one of the murders was made by a left-handed boy or a left-handed person, and Boy A is right-handed. Boy A's confession contains many absurd statements and claims of things that would be impossible for a 14-year-old boy or for a 14-year-old to do. Like, hold on.
Yeah.
Mike.
So that's the thing with a lot of cases, and especially solved cases, is that it's never, unless it's like plain as day, you're never 100% sure, mm-hmm. which is the hard part of that job, because you can never be 100% sure that the person that you're putting away is somebody that actually did this.
Yeah.
And we're seeing more and more how, like, false confessions are a thing, like, because we didn't understand the psychology that, like, happens in, like, interrogations and stuff as much as we do now. And so, like, I could see how a 14-year-old kid who is disturbed and who is struggling, whatever, could admit to this because they want the notoriety, even if they weren't the actual one who did it, which is horrifying in its own right.
Yeah. It's another big thing because, you know... Oh, you know, these, like, famous serial killers get so much fame. Mm-hmm. Why don't I just say, oh, I killed that person just to get that fame?
Exactly.
Yeah, and, like, okay, I'm sorry. You were talking about, like, how he was thanking his God. Mm-hmm. Okay, his God might be different than mine. It more than likely is, because my God will forgive you for your sins all the time. every time I'm like, I've sinned in my life and I've been forgiven by my God. I beg for forgiveness. But this kid isn't asking for forgiveness.
He's asking this for kid protection.
Asking his God to protect him while he murders these people. Honestly, I honestly believe that if it was a kid in the U.S. or who was in, like, my religion of a Catholic, God, judgment day, this 14-year-old boy wouldn't get to see the other side of the gates. Sorry, but he would probably end up in hell. To be honest, like, that's my belief. Like, yeah, you kill someone. Okay, yes. Learn from your mistakes. This boy goes to jail and then gets released. Learn from your mistakes. I'm not saying killing one person in your lifetime isn't bad. That is horrendous. But it gets to a point where if you go to jail, you go to jail to sit in there to think about what you have done so that when you're released, you can go into society being a civilized human. This 14-year-old boy walks out of jail and goes, I'm gonna kill an elementary teacher.
Yeah, I don't think that the system that he was put into really helped him. Mm-hmm. I don't think he was really given a chance to change himself or, you know, like, what was the problem in the first place? And you never look at that. You always want them to fix themselves, but nobody ever tries to fix why that person's doing that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, so the other copycat was called the New York Zodiac. So somebody in America. Heriberto Seda, born July 31st, 1967, often referred to as the New York Zodiac or the Brooklyn Sniper, is an American serial killer who was active in New York City from 1990 through 1993. He fatally shot 3 people and wounded 6 others, 4 critically, before being caught on June 18th, 1996. He was formally charged in the cases on June 21st, 1996, convicted on June 24th, 1998, and sentenced to 232 years of imprisonment.
So, like, steering back to the, like, law students, you know, back to the movie, So at the office, Avery makes fun of Graysmith before they discuss the coded letters because, you know, no one's going to really take the coded letters seriously, and they didn't. Graysmith interprets the letter, which Avery finds helpful, and then he begins sharing information. One of Graysmith's insights about the letters in the Zodiac's reference to man as the, quote, the most dangerous animal of them all, end quote, is a reference to the film The Most Dangerous Game, which features the villainous Count Zaroff, a man who hunts live human prey.
Literally one of my favorite short stories of all time.
Yeah.
It's so interesting.
Quit glorifying murderers!
I can't remember who the writer is. I was going to say the writer's name, but now I lost it. But it's so interesting talking
about people. It's Miss Oth's fault that the 14-year-old boy in Japan went around and
killed
people.
Excuse you! Do not. This is what, like, slander...
I'm joking. It's not. Miss Oft is lovely.
But it's interesting because, like, I think our sophomores at school here read that story, and they don't. Hopefully
none of them are going around killing people.
Yeah, we can
hope
reasonably. Yeah.
My freshman year, we listened to a podcast called.
Serial.
Yeah, it was called Serial.
Oh, we listened to that,
Anand
too.
About Anand Syed. Mm-hmm. And this whole entire story, you guys should go listen to it.
You can find it on YouTube. Just look up Serial Podcast. And then, like, if that doesn't come, just, like, look up Anand Syed podcast. We had to listen to it, too. It is.
It's so good.
Okay, so do you think he was, like, framed? Or do you think he, like, actually, what happened?
I think he was framed.
Have
you seen this?
Okay, what do you think, Oft?
I think that Sarah Koenig did such a good job.
I think he was framed. I think Anand Syed was framed.
Yeah. I think that he was, too. I had this whole thing, but I can't remember what I did.
I have a doc of, like, it wasn't a class assignment, but I made my mom and dad listen to it, and my sister listened to it before she moved out, and they're like, he wasn't framed. So for an argument with my parents, I typed out, like, a 7 to 8 page essay of why Anand Syed was framed, and I made them read it, and I still have it somewhere.
Anyway, yeah. In the movie, 2 weeks after one of Grace Smith's insights about the letters reference, they found out, San Francisco taxi cab driver Paul Stein is shot and killed in the city's Presidio Heights district. The Zodiac killer mails pieces of Stein's bloodstained shirt to the Chronicle along with a taunting letter. San Francisco police inspectors David Tochi and his partner Bill Armstrong are assigned to the case by Captain Marty Lee and work closely with Vallejo's Jack Mullinax and Captain Ken Narlo in Napa. Someone claiming to be the Zodiac continues to send taunting letters and speaks on the phone with lawyer Melvin Belli on the KGO-TV morning talk shows hosted by Jim Dunbar. So this guy is, like, extremely cocky in the way that he does things. And he named himself the Zodiac, and it wasn't quite clear on why he did that. Because it wasn't linked to, like, their Zodiac signs or anything.
Like you said with the cocky, like, my family hates cocky people. I'm not going to name names. Nor initials. I'm not gonna name names, but their initials are, and then say their name. I'm not gonna say his name. He's older than me. I think he's like 3 years older than me. He got really cocky one night at a bonfire at our house with my dad, and then he fell asleep in our yard. And because he is cocky, he had just bought a brand new $400 cowboy boots, and my dad spray painted them red. So don't get cocky around me and my family. I'm pretty sure my dad wouldn't spray paint a serial killer's boots. He'd probably do something worse. Don't know what that would be, but yeah. Don't get cocky around my family. Like, sending in pieces of their bloodstained shirt. Like,
that's horrifying. So, the detectives in this case, they questioned a suspect, and they noticed that he wears a Zodiac wristwatch with the same logo used by the killer. And so they kind of, like, suspecting this guy a lot. However, a handwriting expert insists Allen did not write the Zodiac letters, even though Allen said to be ambidextrous. Avery receives a letter threatening his life. Becoming paranoid, he turns to drugs and alcohol.
Hayden Macklight to the office.
Isn't that it?
We're currently in a classroom, so yeah.
He shares this letter with the Riverside Police Department that the killer might have been active before the initial killings. The case's notary waits on Toshi, who cannot sit through a Hollywood film.
Didn't he have, like...
Loosely based on Zodiac.
Didn't, like, the Zodiac killer have, like, 20 to 30 victims? Like,
that like 37. Said? Like, they know for sure 5 of them he did kill. But said, in, like, one of his notes, he said there's many... like, you guys are only finding the easier ones. There's harder ones out there. There's, like, more difficult ones out there. And, they're like, okay, based on, like, because he didn't make all of his murders the same. Like, I don't remember who it was. There was one guy who's notorious for murder. Like, he made pretty much all of his killings, like, the exact same. Like, he stabbed all of his victims. I don't remember who it was. But, like, he didn't do it all, but, like, he did them all in the same way. Like, he did a lot of couples. And, like, with the first two we read about, they were both couples. And coincidence or not, most of the time when he did, like, when this guy killed couples, the guys survived. The women didn't. No thanks.
So
I'm glad he's dead.
The artist in this movie, he tries to continue his own investigation, and he becomes obsessed with this killer. And he begins receiving phone calls from someone breathing heavily. You all know that part in the scary movie where you get the phone call and they're like...
Every scream movie, I see you.
So he becomes so obsessed that he loses his job, and his wife even leaves him, taking their children. He learns that Allen, the guy that they're suspecting, lived close to Farron and probably knew her, and that his birthday matches the one the Zodiac gave when he spoke to one of Melvin's maids. While circumstantial evidence seemed to indicate his guilt, the physical evidence, such as fingerprints and handwriting, do not implicate him. And in 1983, Gray Smith tracks Allen to a hardware store where he works as a sales clerk, and they stare at each other, and then Gray Smith leaves. 8 years later, after he wrote a book, The Zodiac, which is a bestseller. Mike Magoo, which is one of his victims that survived, he identifies him from a police mugshot. But at the end of the movie, we see that Alan died before police could question him, and the case remains open. So,
yeah. Like, we found our murderer, but he's dead, so we can't really, like, talk about it.
Yeah, you don't get
so,
the answers.
Yeah,
you want.
Five confirmed dead, two injured, possibly 20 to 28 total dead, but he claimed to have had 37. So, I think that a lot of serial killers claim to have a lot more because this is one that, of them that has carries that pride with him, trying to get as much as he can.
Like, I carry pride in, like, my hunting and, like, carry pride in my family, not killing people.
Anyways, but that was the end of the movie. Oh, what were you going to say?
But then again, since he killed so many of his victims in so many different ways, then again, like, he could have killed more than five, yeah. But you wouldn't know because, like, you can't tie it to any of it.
Yeah. Okay, I do want to ask one question. Mm-hmm. Like, this whole time I've kind of, like, been watching Miss Entrepreneur reading and everything. You seem, like, very invested in all of this. Mm-hmm. I want to know. So you said you've watched the movie The Zodiac a long time ago, like, years ago. How old would you say you were when you watched it?
Probably 16.
So around my age, because I'm 17. So, like, around mine and Claire's age and Shiloh's age. I almost forgot who you were for a second. Like, when you were watching this, like, what do you remember, like, what was running through your mind as you were watching this movie? Or, like, why did you watch the movie?
I always liked true crime. Like, my mom and I watched Dateline stuff always. Yeah. So true crime was definitely something I liked. I ended up picking up, like, podcasts and stuff pretty soon after that. Like, when I went to college, I was like, oh, this is great to, like, listen to. But yeah, I remember being very on edge about, like, the movie and being very, like, invested in the story just because it's such a, like, that it's a real thing. It seems like fiction, right? Where this killer is so dramatic and he is, like, seeking out the, you know, the cops and writing these ciphers and all these crazy things. And I thought it was, like, really fascinating that something that seems fictional was actually real.
Like, okay, I was going to say a second. I'm like, please do not say that it seems, like, so, like, it was so awesome to you that, like, there is this guy who can actually be doing this. And I'm like, please, don't say that,
like,
off.
It's, like, wild that somebody...
Yeah.
Somebody behaves like that. And,
I'm so interested in the psychology that goes behind it and what makes a person, like... I think that nobody is born like this. I don't think... I think it's always the upbringing. Because if you look at the backstory behind... every single serial killer or anybody who does this, they always have something that kind of makes, like, them switch.
Yeah, they were, like, abused as a child, sexually harassed. Like, there's people who go and kill people who were raped and then they, like, switch. Or, like, they were bullied and picked on in school, or they were, like, neglected.
Yeah.
And then that's, like, they do it for, like, that attention, that, like, the attention, like, everyone's longing for, that, like, they long for. And yes, there's other ways that they could go about getting that attention. But to them, the best way to get that attention is go out and kill somebody.
Because wasn't, like, Dahmer, like, he was neglected in his home life? And he was also
ashamed.
He wasn't
neglected. His dad more neglected him. His mom. Yeah. His mom
just
loved
left.
Him. His mom just, like, peace out, homie. Yeah.
And then he was ashamed because at the time, you know, being... like
17, 18.
Well, then
also,
being attracted
he was,
to the same gender.
He was also gay
back in the 1960s.
Yeah,
that
like, and that was a no-go for, like, that time. And then, like, his dad being, like, neglecting him, like, this, that's kind
that
of
was
just
his
what,
upbringing,
like, yeah. Yeah, and that sucks. And I'm stuttering a lot, sorry. I do it when I get scared. part of me is very, very happy that this man is dead. But then the other half of me is like, I wish he was alive so we could get the answers. Like,
he was obviously very, very intelligent.
He was very intelligent, but he was also psychotic. Mm-hmm. Like,
most of those people kind of are. They have that intelligence.
He's so freaking smart. And, like, in a bad way. He is so smart. and so intelligent that he can literally send in pieces of evidence, bloodstained shirts or letters and stuff like that to police and not get caught.
Mm-hmm. And then one of...
it's so psychotic that you would be like, like, he's pretty much being like... like, every 16-year-old kid, when they first get their first car, they're, like, flinging around their keys on their lanyard, like, showing off and all that. But he's just, like, that's pretty much what he is. But he's, like, sending letters being like, ha-ha, look what I did. You can't catch me.
Because wasn't, like, there was one of the case, one of his victims that we read yesterday, he left a watch.
Yeah.
And then he left
boot prints and
then hair. Yeah. Like, on the victim. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Like, he's pretty much like, haha, you can't catch me. Catch me if you can. Where, like, every 16-year-old girl, mainly girls, will, like, walk around flinging their keys around. I can see Miss Soft as that kind of person. Like, when she first gets her keys. Like, who are you? Flinging around your keys.
No, my 2002 Dodge Neon? No, I was not.
but then he's just like, here. I'll give you some of the evidence, but, like, you can't find me.
Yeah, you can't.
Bye. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that's scary.
And very much, like, a product of being in that era when we didn't have the DNA and the tracking and things that we have now.
Like, no, not saying I would, but if I go and kill someone and be like, and then send in a letter and be like, here's a bloodstained t-shirt. You can have that. Bye!
Here, I give you.
A day later.
There's a gift for you.
I'd be arrested. Yeah. We're in freaking 1960s and 70s. You're like, bloodstained t-shirt, bye. And they're like, don't know who you are. Who could you be? Mm-hmm. Oh, you're dead. Now you're the murderer. Like, it's horrendous. Like,
so, yeah.
Yeah.
The movie right now is not free on any platform, but you can rent it for $3 on Prime. But that's the end of our episode. Thank you for joining us, Ms. Oft. This was
lovely to be here.
Been a wild episode.
It was
very dark.
Yeah. Very dark. And it's kind of funny because I think all of ours have, because you were like, you love true crime. And I'm like, mm-hmm. Funny thing was, before we were doing like true stories, we were going to do true crime. Mm-hmm. And I think every single one of our movies, except for our Christmas movie, we did a Christmas movie. Yeah. I wanted to do a true story like of a murder Christmas movie, but I decided to keep it a little light since it's Christmas. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm not ashamed, it was based off of murder. Mm-hmm. We did The Conjuring House.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We did The Zodiac. And then we did Operation Christmas Drop. Like, our first two episodes were, like, dark and dark. And then Christmas! And then dark again. Because I think the next one we're doing after this is, like, the Hacksaw Ridge. And then we're doing Ring of Fire. So I think...
I mean, it lightens
up.
It
lightens up a little bit. But
and
I think
on the up note.
Yep.
You are. You're like the climax of our podcast.
Sure, I'll be your bright spot.
Yes! Yep. You're always the bright spot. Well, that is it. And that is Take One, episode 5, The Big Picture. Cut.